Offensive players, beware. This is a nightmare show for you. This is nightmare fuel. Future Hall of Famers, honors award winners, generational players on offense. No one cares. This is a defensive program on the Up and Adams show today. We get Luke Kuechly possibly for the last time as a non-Hall of Famer. NFL Honors is 1 week away. He's been visiting with us every week this year. We're going to break down some things. Bills, Chiefs, Eagles, of course, their matchup. But I got to get back to the Bills side of things. Also, what if I told you that my favorite for Defensive Player of the Year is on the show today? Patrick frickin' Surtain, he who can fall asleep on any pillow anywhere, I'm told, is joining us. Let's go. Offensive players, drumble. In your boots at this guest lineup today, Hall of Fame finalist Luke Kuechly, All-Pro DPOY finalist Patrick Surtain on the show, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Vic Fangio. Can't wait to talk to Pat Surtain about that. What is the key to stopping it all on offense for both squads? Can't wait. Little Spags, little Vic, little fun here. We love a defensive show. I'm kind of lying, Hamilton, but when you look at today's lineup, it's hard for me to not get a little juiced about defense. Not usually my favorite thing to speak about.
Yeah, but I mean, these guys, you can't beat these guests. And especially with what they have coming up for them next week, it's the most exciting time of year to talk to them.
Most importantly, we have Grater's ice cream. We're doing a taste test. Look at how cute Kat is. Kat, who like runs my life. I haven't seen her all week. She ices it up. She puts it in her own personal cooler. Grater's. Everybody wants this. Grater's sent me like a million of them. This is how much I love Grater's. It is the Skyline Chili. I know it's reading backwards. It's fine. We like my mirrored stuff here on Zoom. It's a little vanity project. Don't worry. Skyline Spice with oyster crackers. I'm going to give this a try later on the show. I bet Kuechly, Cincy boy, would love this. Jason Kelce wants it. You don't get it, Jason Kelce. We get it here with Luke Kuechly on the Up and Adams show.
I'm very excited to see how this goes.
I think it'll be delicious. I'm
extremely jealous that I don't get to try it.
Grater's, I mean, maybe we'll try it in New Orleans. Maybe they're making their way down there. I heard a whisper or two. That'd be amazing. We have so much to get to. We are here. It is Thursday. We're going to Super Bowl. We'll be there next week. We have shows Tuesday to Friday on Radio Row, special two-hour shows. You have to be subscribed to our YouTube page. I'm sick of posting all the content on Twitter. You guys love it. It's good content. We bring you the best guests in the business. Get to my YouTube page and subscribe to it at Up and Adams Show, because that's where we'll be posting all of the fun, the live, the hijinks, the layover, the interstitial conversations that happen as these guys are getting mic'd up and leaving. It's a big Super Bowl party all week long with FanDuel on Radio Row, 10 to noon, 2 hour shows, people. So get there, subscribe to the YouTube page. It's going to be insane. I'll probably go to NFL Honors. Hamilton, probably pack a suit, please. I need you to also be there. We don't quite have our plans sealed up yet, but it's an honor to be invited to be part of that party, to have Luke Kuechly and Patrick Surtain stopping by this morning to give their thoughts. I feel so lucky. We'll find out Thursday if Luke's a Hall of Famer. We'll find out if he's a first ballot next Thursday, or if Surtain can become just the third corner to win Defensive Player of the Year in 3 decades. It's unbelievable. So as we sort of inch towards Super Bowl Sunday, it's kind of hard to look at this game without considering and thinking about the Mahomes of it all. I feel strongly we should be focusing on this a little bit more and a little less on last week or kind of ick storylines that are making excuses for things that happened or went one way or another. Every Super Bowl, there is legacy at play. Right? There's unwritten. There is what people at any level are striving for, but especially at the quarterback position. There's a lot of focus on the three-peat, as there should be, but there are more layers, okay, to what Patrick can accomplish that I want to dig into this morning. Let's take a look at this. Oh my gosh. Mahomes, already about to become the third quarterback ever to start in 5 Super Bowls, okay? ever joining Brady, who's calling the game, and Elway. And if he wins this one, and he might, he would tie Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw for the second most rings by a quarterback in NFL history with 4. And I'll say this again, he is still only 29 years old. And it's important to note, Tom didn't get his 4th until he was 30 freaking 7, you guys. Can you, what? He's 29. Tom did this at 37. Like, you want to have fatigue? Good luck, man. Take some. I got Benadryl. I got Zyrtec. I got stuff up the wazoo here if you have an allergy to this. It'll put you right to sleep through it because it's not going to stop. I don't see that. How long will he have Andy Reid there? How long will he have Travis Kelce there? Those are other questions. But Patrick is a winner. Patrick is used to winning. You're fighting that, Eagles. You're fighting that every other team in the AFC trying to get there and knock them out. Now, if Patrick wants to, and I'm sure he does, and if he's challenging Brady in this GOAT conversation, and he is, I think this is one he has to have. That's the pressure on Patrick. He has to win this. He can't get back to the 2 head-to-head playoff losses. If he pulls off a three-peat and gets more than halfway to Tom's ring total before he has a 30 on his birthday cake, huh? Then it becomes a much more interesting discussion, but he's got to have this one. This is immortalization. And I know that I've said this, Ham, we have a big show. I'm not going to take too long here dilly-dallying, as we have Luke Kuechly and Pat Surtain on the show. Pat Surtain will have great insight on Mahomes as well. I think I told you when I went for Netflix to sit down with him, Ham, and it was ahead of the Steelers game on Christmas, he could not have been more serious. That yeah. was the vibe. And I've been around Patrick enough. And I left that and I came to you. I remember telling you about the interview. And he is, I think he is feeling that three-peat, the pressure. I think his legacy means everything to him. And it I could just feel it heavy. It was heavy. That's what I told you. It is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it and again, a chance, you know, all these other lists, he's there with legends on all these lists. The chance to stand alone with an accomplishment like that is, you have to be feeling that, you know, he appreciates the history of the game and everything that means. Like, that is, this is his chance to stand alone with one of these categories. And yeah, and I don't know if we'll ever see it again. If the Chiefs can pull this off, it's one of these things. It's so hard to do in this sport. It's this will make this the greatest dynasty I think that we've seen in the league if they pull off this three-peat.
And then what a bigger accomplishment would it be for Vic Fangio to say, psych, I'm going to do this. Yeah. And with what he's done with his defense, he could, right? It has been unreal. Let's get into this. The Birds, as you see here, they've gone from 31st in pass defense a year ago without him to first this season. Let me say that again for you out there enjoying your coffee this morning. 31st in pass defense a year ago without him to first this season. We saw it in the NFC Championship game, one of the few defenses able to slow Jaden Daniels down all year. I know Mahomes is a different animal. I get it. But they made this Commanders like scrap and claw for every inch. They held them to just over 4 yards of play. That's pitiful. And it was a thing of beauty, okay? Mahomes, on this stage, yeah, it's a little different. He has faced, he also knows how to win. I think he only gets up for these high-pressure moments. Like, that's like, it's like his level of his capacity, his threshold is that high. But he's faced a number one ranked pass defense in the playoffs 3 separate times in his career. Oh, my goodness. He's won those 3 games. The Chiefs have averaged 37 points per game in those matchups. And that includes the last Super Bowl matchup between these two teams in 2022. And Fangio was getting his feet wet and he was consulting for Philly. So it's different now because Vic is in charge. He's got them going. He's got them bought in. He's got them playing at this level. He's calling the shots. And I can't, he just must be a joy. I mean, it would be a Hamilton fever dream or a Luke Kuechly and Pat Surtain fever dream. Pat, who of course knows him and knows what makes him tick and knows what makes him unique. I'm going to ask him about him shortly. But Vic in the lab right now is amazing to think about. And the Chiefs haven't really been able to run the ball probably as much or how they've wanted to consistently with injuries and all of that. So I don't know. Like, if Vic is able to contain Patrick at all, I do think that Philly has a shot to disrupt and end the three-peat bid. I do. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to be better. They're going to be perfect and better, but could they do it? Sure. And by the way, big picture, I just love Fangio. I've always loved Fangio. he's been such a great DC for so long. It's kind of nuts to me that he doesn't have a ring yet. I'd like to see him get a ring. It's his third Super Bowl appearance, third, no rings, no hardware. He's been doing it for decades. Yeah, his first was, of course, the Harbaugh Bowl 12 years ago, which was also in New Orleans, as was my first Super Bowl as well. So it would be crazy to watch Vic get that done. And it's just how he'll get it done. It'll be interesting. We'll get in the minds of Luke Kuechly and Patrick Surtain on all of this. Vic's NFL career, by the way, I said decades, it's 40 years ago. Okay, he was an outside linebacker coach for the New Orleans Saints. So the Dome Patrol, hello, Ricky Jackson, Pat Swilling, DPOY year. That was his position group. He knows how to coach. Dolphins fans, read it and weep. Howie Rosen made you look stupid. He hired him 31st to first pass defense, okay? Great pulls by Howie. Great job by Vic. It's all working in tandem. What a full circle moment if he can finally get a ring. Okay, we have so much to get to. We have to talk about Fangio because it's a defensive up in Adams today, okay? We've got Luke Kuechly, Hall of Fame bound. Probably he's not going to want to talk about that, definitely. So we'll dig into Super Bowl after this. Pat Surtain on the show, too.
Chance here in the stadium.
We'll be wrapped up by Luke Kuechly. Kuechly, you are beautiful. That man's a tackling machine. Luke Kuechly, what more can you do?
Here he is, five-time first-team All-Pro linebacker, Panthers radio analyst, smartest guy in football. Probably last time I'm calling you a non-Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, but maybe even more importantly, Luke Kuechly, part owner of the Monterrey Osos. Talk to me about the fact that you are now an American football team owner down in Mexico.
Yeah, how about that? So that was the brainchild of Ryan Khalil. Ryan Khalil lives out in California, obviously played here for a long time. He owns a production company with Blake Griffin. And Ryan has always talked about, what would we do if we were the owners of a football team? So Ryan's been hunting for a long time and he found it down there and he's rebranded it. And he wants to do a documentary and follow the team throughout the season. And if Ryan's going to do it, it's going to be really cool. So for Ryan to include us and Greg and McCaffrey and Pep and Stu and Sam Darnold and of course Coach Rivera, it's going to be it's going to be a lot of fun. Ryan put it all together for us and it'll be an awesome journey for us.
I heard Blake Griffin's involved in this, George Kittle, the names you mentioned, the Part of My Take guys, Big Cat, PFT commenter. Congratulations on this. I can't wait to see what happened, but I need to know what the pitch was. So you're sitting there on a Zoom or a phone call or a text or whatever it is. What's the pitch from Blake Griffin and Ryan Khalil?
Well, Ryan always is looking for reasons to get everybody together and hang out. And he's like, hey, would this sound fun to you for us to go down to Mexico and watch a football team and have fun with the guys down in Mexico and have a convenient excuse to go on a trip and talk about the game of football and spread the game of football? So I think everybody kind of signed up and said, absolutely.
That's amazing. And they, by the way, successful not long ago, 2022 Liga de Football Americano, Monterrey won the LFA championship. So I can't wait to see, I don't know whose wedding is next. Maybe yours, Luke, but you're scribbling down plays for these Osos down there, but that's very cool. Are you happy I'm not talking to you at the Hall of Fame?
Hey, you know what belongs in the Hall of Fame? You already spoke about it. It's Grater's ice cream. I don't know how you got hooked up with Grater's.
I have
Grater's
my freezer
ice cream,
right here. Listen, I am a true, I kind of belong, I belong to Cincinnati, of course. I got the Skyline Spice. I'm not going to try it yet, but it is right here. Grater's is the best thing that's ever happened, as we all know. It's truly the best ice cream, but this is the Skyline Chili. It's called French Pot Ice Cream, Skyline Spice with oyster crackers. What do you think? Would you be brave enough to try?
That is a combination of two staples in Cincinnati: Skyline Chili, Grater's ice cream. Actually, my parents had some, my brothers had some, and they both gave it a thumbs up. So now I got to find a way to get it down here in Charlotte.
Oh, I have a feeling. I mean, I got you here. Well, it's cream, milk, cane sugar, crackers, That's kind of it. Eggs and some spice. I'm actually very interested in this. I can't wait to try it at the end of the show. Graders is the best. The Bengals are the best. But guess what, Luke? They didn't make it. They're not in it. They're all making checks on Radio Row next week, trying to, you know, hawk product. So let's get into the teams that will be unavailable for Media Row and all of the fun appearances at Super Bowl in New Orleans at Super Bowl 59. I know you've looked at the tape, both these teams. You, of course, with the Panthers radio calls, you've prepped on these teams. What is the most important? Take me like into the one-on-one matchup that in your mind is going to decide this thing.
Well, I think what the theme this year with the Eagles is their ability to run the ball. And so for the Chiefs, I think it starts up front with Chris Jones. Can he be disruptive? Oh. We all know that he lines up all over the place. Is he able to penetrate and make plays behind the line of scrimmage? Because we all know the explosive plays that Saquon's been able to make this year is what's been deal breakers. And you look at Chris Jones, his ability to penetrate, get through the line of scrimmage, create negative plays, puts him behind the sticks, and then the advantage starts to slowly slide to Kansas City in third and long situations with that Spags defense.
I mean, Saquon has been unstoppable. I feel like I ask you every week, how do you stop him? What do you do? We talk gaps. We talk this. The line for his rushing yards are 112.5 on FanDuel Sportsbook right now. Let's say he gets those yards. Let's say he gets a touchdown, little icing on, little graders on top of that. Is that enough for the Eagles, or do they need more to beat the Chiefs?
I think he was under 130 last week, and they scored 55 points. So I don't think he needs to have a particular number for them to win. I think the name of the game for the Chiefs is, can we limit explosive plays? Because if you look at the Chiefs on the defense side of the ball, I don't think it's going to be a three and out type of game. I think things are going to be converted. But what happens when the ball gets down the field into the red zone? Can they hold them to field goals, and can they take the ball away in the red zone? I think if you start giving up these long explosive plays and they score touchdowns, that's when it gets out of hand. But if they can give up 3, 4, 5 yards at a time, tighten up in the red zone, I think the advantage again pushes back to Kansas City. But the explosive plays of Philly is what's killed their opponents throughout the season.
And it kills their soul too. Like, you almost have to like know that Saquon's going to break off a couple and be able to deal with that, right? Be able to say, okay, I'm not going to let this get me down. We're going to go right back up there, out there and try. It's like very, I can't imagine fun to have to deal with that. The Chiefs, by the way, have gone 18 straight playoff games. This is so crazy. They've gone 18 straight playoff games without allowing a 100-yard rusher with Spags.
That's pretty stout. They're pretty good on the defense side of the ball. I think they'd have to do a lot in order to keep Saquon away from 100 yards. But, you know, we've talked about Saquon all year and how to stop him, and nobody's been able to do that. But I think if you look at Kansas City on the defensive side of the ball, what does Philly do really well? They're big, they're physical, there's huge run lanes. So if you're Kansas City, what do you do on the defensive side of the ball? Do you pressure them? Do you use line movement to kind of alter where the aiming points and the hitting points of the run game are? I think if you just line up and four down and say, hey, go win against this big physical offensive line, you're asking for trouble. But I'm sure Spags has some run blitzes, some interior run blitzes, some blitzes off the edge that all incorporate some sort of line movement to use the quickness of this Kansas City defensive line and hopefully throw off some blocking assignments, let these linebackers get downhill in the clean running lanes on Saquon. And then the one-on-one tackles are really what it's going to come down to on that second level. If Nick Bolton and Drew Tranquil can get downhill, they're clean to Saquon. Can they make that tackle and limit the yards after contact that we've talked about so much with Saquon this year?
Saquon's one thing. If they do limit him, throw those blitzes, those tricks, whatever. We've talked a lot about how what you wanted to see was Jalen Hurts in these past situations. Did you see what you needed to see last week from Jalen?
Yeah, I think he threw it around a lot better last week. He was 20 of 28. Obviously, A.J. Brown got more involved. Dallas Goedert, Devontae Smith, their three best players in the pass game were heavily involved. And then I give Jalen Hurts a lot of credit in saying, hey, the last couple weeks I haven't played to my best. I'm not going to go out there and try to light it up. I'm going to take what the defense gives me. I'm going to make a couple big throws. When he's at his best, he's thrown in rhythm. He's going to take his drop. His back foot's going to hit. He's going to come off that back foot and make a great throw. And then his ability to lean on that run game and not feel like I need to go out there and prove to people who I am, what I am. He's going to sit back there. He's going to hand the ball off to Saquon when he needs to make a big rhythm throw. I still believe he has the ability to do that.
I talked to a couple of coaches this week because I'm trying to book my shows for next week, and mentioned that you were going to be on the show today. And there was a lot of, you know, Luke's instincts. I think what makes Luke so great? Luke's instincts. Luke knew 80% of the plays before the snap. Luke knew this. So you see, I'm seeing these Steve Spags blitzes, right? This pressure. He does it a lot. I know that some of them are unique. You couldn't see what happened on 4th and 5, right? What is it about these blitzes with Spags that makes them so effective?
Well, I think first of all, they get him in a situation where they want him 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7 plus. It allows them to send more pressure. As pressure comes, they get free runners like this right here. And then the routes downfield don't develop. So the ball either has to be thrown hot, and they're a good tackling defense so they can come up and make these quick tackles in the ball in the flat, or the ball in these routes don't have the ability to unfold downfield and there's nowhere to throw the ball to. And I think a lot of these open runners and cleaners runners come from the ability of Spags to disguise not only who's coming, but what kind of coverage you're playing. Are we going to show 6-7 guys on the line of scrimmage, send 5 and then drop? Or are we going to send, you know, 6 guys, play 0 man behind it, and make you go make a decision and throw the ball? Or are we just going to rush 4, drop 7 and say, hey, you have to find a window and throw the ball? So I think that's the biggest thing with Spags is nothing looks the same. There's all kinds of bodies around the line of scrimmage. And at the end of the day, if you don't get everybody blocked up in these 3rd and 7 windows, and there's really no opportunity for these routes to develop down the field. And just a really good job by them playing well on 1st and 2nd down, and then Spags not being repetitive and different looks and different guys coming and people on a really good blitz path and staying disciplined. They always keep the quarterback inside the pocket, make him step up the pressure. They're just well coached, they're well disciplined, and they disguise really well.
I feel like you're so plugged into that Bills fan base. You have a relationship that you don't hide from with Sean McDermott and company. That fan base is in shambles. Like, they are feeling it. There's blame game. There's this, there's that. What do you sort of make of, you know, Bills fans feel like this was taken away from them? What do you think happened?
I just think there's such an expectation in Buffalo with, you know, the coach from Sean McDermott to Brandon Bean, the GM, to the quarterback, Josh Allen, of, you know, making the playoffs is what's expected, and going to the Super Bowl is the expectation every year. So first of all, it's, you know, 2 teams make it every year, so that's very difficult. Mm-hmm. But when you go on the road and you play an Arrowhead against the Kansas City Chiefs, you just have to flat out win and not make it close. And, you know, there's a couple of plays at the end of the game. They're obviously, you know, everyone's talking about the 4th down sneak play, and you can say what you want about that. But if you're going to win games on the road in the playoffs at a place like Arrowhead against the Chiefs and in the run they've had the past couple of years, you just have to flat out beat them. You can't make it close. You can't make anyone else make the decision other than you. It's kind of like when Buffalo played them the first time, they just flat out beat them. So, you know, that's the hard part. You can blame it on whoever you want. I don't think that's necessarily the right thing to do. I think when you get in there and you're the Buffalo Bills playing a game on the road in the playoffs, you just have to go win. Straight up have to beat them.
When I got on the call the day after, so Monday morning, the first thing out of my mouth was like, why are we sneaking so much if it's not working? I know it worked for them all year. Like, why are there, he was 2 for 5, I think. Like, it wasn't working. Do you think that the Eagles with against Spags should push the tush in the Super Bowl?
I think Philly just does it in such a different manner than anybody else in the NFL.
How?
I just think they're so big and physical on the inside. You look at Saquon, everybody's seen him squat. Dallas Goedert's a big defense or a big tight end. Obviously, Jalen Hurts is a strong, powerful body. And then you look at the guys on the inside, there is so much strength and power. Landon Dickerson, Mekhi Becton obviously slid inside from playing tackle. Cam Jurgens, the center. There's so much power and strength on the inside there. And he does such a great job of getting behind those 3 inside guys and the great push from Goddard and Saquon. I think they're just very efficient at it. They're very good at it. And if you're Kansas City, I think you have to be very cognizant. If you're an edge player, like a corner, some sort of a DB, you got to keep your eyes on your tight ends. Their ability, you know, they don't have to sneak it every time. I think if they go from 4th and 1 to a 1st down, you say, hey, you know what? That's unfortunate, but we live to play another down. Where you get in trouble is if they fake sneak it, and they pop a ball over the top for a big play, an explosive touchdown. that's where the real problem comes in. So yeah, you'd like to stop them on fourth down, but these outside corners and DBs have to play with really good eyes on the end man on line of scrimmage.
I'm trying to understand. So Spags can't just do the same thing he did last week to this team?
No, I think it's a completely different sneak. You know, you watch Josh and how he sneaks the ball. Everything seems to go snap, let the offensive line get a push and move to his left. Jalen Hurts is, he's just right behind that offensive line. So, I mean. So
it's the center and the guards that are the big difference.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, Keekly, you teach me things all the time. I love it. Hey, quickly, who is the most difficult offensive play caller you had to face in your career?
Oh man, I think the guy that I played against the most, there's two of them. I think Kyle Shanahan, obviously, you know, Washington, then he was in Cleveland, then he was in Atlanta, and then he was in San Francisco. I felt like we played them every year, and we knew him, he knew us, right? So that's number one. And then Sean Payton down in New Orleans with Drew. I felt like there was always three or four plays each game where, you know, we were able to draw something up on the defensive side of the ball and hit them, like clean sack, clean negative yardage play, surprise Drew with a coverage that he hadn't seen or a version of it before. And then you flip the script, and then Drew and Sean, I felt like, would always have a couple plays where they got us exactly where they wanted us to be. They got the exact coverage they want. They knew how we played that coverage, and then they were able to get a big play on it. So it was always kind of the back and forth with Sean and Drew of, all right, we're going to make one or two plays just based on what we know about you and what we know you know about us. And then you flip the script, and it's kind of the same way on the other side of the ball as well.
And you gave them hell, both of them, which has led to a future Hall of Fame career that you don't want to talk about. But we're just going to keep getting smarter here on the program. It is time for the weekly Keekly, not for the meekly, probably pretty geekly moment of genius. You, my friend, you're brilliant. I need to know one play from either the Eagles or the Chiefs this season that you just know is going to make me smarter ahead of the Super Bowl.
I think you look at the Chiefs, and they're so well coached, and they get a lot of man coverage on third down, and they understand who their guys are. They understand what Travis Kelce does well. They understand what Mahomes does well, and then obviously Worthy on the outside. So it was Chiefs against the Chargers, and they get man coverage right here. And it's a simple pick play, but how they set it up is great. You get the fastest guy in the NFL running over, and then you get Kelce setting the screen in the pick. And the biggest thing in plays like this is you have to know how to be the pick guy. The amount of times that these teams run these mesh routes and the pick player gets called for offensive pass interference and the play comes back, and then it goes from third and short to third and long. And essentially now you got to go punt the ball. When they put Kelce out there, he knows how to get in the way. He knows how to not get a flag thrown on him. He knows how to set his guy up. So for them to push two big bodies to the backside of that formation, let Worthy come across, it's good play design. It's good acknowledgement of Mahomes. Hey, I got man coverage. And then good job by Worthy of just running that route with great speed and confidence. But, you know, you're going to get something like that against Philly this week. And if you're Philly and you're playing man coverage and there's any kind of a hole player sitting in the middle of that defense with no responsibility other than to be a help player, you have to be able to look at that. If it's Zach Bond, you got to say, hey, I've got a compressed formation. There's people tight. We're playing man coverage. Mahomes knows that. If I'm a cut player and I'm taking over that route, I need to tell that corner right away, hey, Darius Slay, I'm going to cut him right now. And then he can slide off and make another play.
I mean, and this is where I did this whole thing about Brett Veach back in 2022 with the draft class going so defense heavy for the Tyreek trade, all of that. But like Brett Veach adding more speed to this offense in terms of Worthy was gifted to them, which was like a just shock around the NFL when it happened. We knew it was coming. And then even Hollywood Brown, like adding that speed can turn these easy completions into these big plays that turn the game on their head and decide games. We have Luke Keekly with us. We're going to take a short break. We're going to bring in Patrick Surtain. This is why you want to be subscribed to the YouTube, because you're not going to see this on the TV side. Get to the YouTube, subscribe, and let's take a short TV break and bring in Patrick Surtain. I think I'm going crazy. Trying to plot on the turf. I'm just trying to keep my hands straight and out on the turf. But the price I have to pay now is the worst. So I went and got a face. But sports media is not supposed to have favorites. We're supposed to treat everybody the same. No, this is one of my favorite players. Two-time first team All-Pro, a special person on and off the field, my defensive player of the year favorite. Patrick Surtain, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well. How are you? Thank you for having
Good.
Me.
Good. We had enough of that Chiefs and Zach Bond talk. You ready to talk about you?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. We said bye to Luke Kuechly, DPOY finalist. It's very special. How much have you thought about your name being called at NFL Honors next week?
Yeah, I thought about it a lot. Honestly, it's such a surreal feeling to be mentioned amongst your peers in that way. I mean, it just goes to show you, you know, the season that I had and the goals that I had aligned in mind. And, you know, holding that trophy would be such a huge honor because not only would it be an honorable trophy, but I'll be back in New Orleans where most of my family is from. So it'd definitely be a huge honor for me and my family. And, you know, I just can't wait to see what happens. So.
What do you think was your signature game this season? So let's say, like, if we could submit to the voters the one game that you're like, yeah, I know that you're too humble to do this, but help me out. The one game that solidifies your defensive player of the year status.
I definitely say the Raiders game. I think that was a game where I impacted the game, I could say, because we was down, as you can see, 10-3. You know, they had all the momentum going. They was down in all territory trying to score. And, you know, I just had to make a play. And as you can see, the momentum shifted and that changed the outcome of the game. As we were victorious in the game, then later on in that game, I had a second pick as well, too. So I think that game definitely solidified my mark this season. And that was definitely my highlight moment of the season, for sure.
100-yard pick six, not bad. You see how good we are? I had that footage ready. I was like, that he's going to go right to that Raiders game. A brilliant performance. I mean, you would be the first DB to win this award since Gilmore did it back in 2019. You'd be the third to get it in the last 15 years. It'd be incredible for the position. It'd be an incredible recognition. You said that you wanted to meet your goals. What were your goals for this year? I saw you back in August. What were your goals?
I think the first thing was making the playoffs. You know, reaching that stage, I think is a huge accomplishment for us as a team. I mean, as we got a lot to look forward to, going into the years ahead because, I mean, I feel like a lot of people doubted us this year. I mean, I think we exceeded a lot of people's expectations, but we knew what type of team we had going into the year. We was young, hungry, and determined to reach that point. You know, in the season. And I think throughout the season, we had our ups and downs, but we were able to prevail and sort of set us up for success along the lines of the season. And it was good to finally reach that playoff spot. It was good for Broncos country to reach it. Something we haven't done in 8 years. So that was huge. And obviously, you know, all pros, Pro Bowl, that's always a goal in mind for the season to capture that. But defense player year, that was a goal I had in mind. But, you know, that's something that you definitely got to work for. And I had my mindset on it that I was going to be a finalist for that and hopefully win it. So, you know, it was something that I envisioned, something that I had in mind. And, you know, the season that I had, I think I've proven it to be so.
You're at Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever with your dad. What are those conversations like on who's goated, who's better? Where are we standing with that convo?
I don't know, man. I think
come on.
If I get this DPOY, it's pretty clear early on. I think
Do you let him know?
Yeah, we have our talks here and there, but I think he's pretty known on, you know, what's happening right now, what's transpiring throughout my career, especially so early on in my career with the things that I accomplished. But, you know, I think he understands what's going on and he might have to pass the crown down a little bit. So,
yeah, I'd say so. Especially if you're walking across that honor stage, which I think you are likely to do. You allowed one of the lowest passer ratings this season when targeted. You don't get targeted a lot. I bet that's pretty frustrating for you, as far as, you know, and a good thing for, I guess, quarterbacks not launching to your side of the field or wherever you might be. I'd love to know, out of the slate that you were handed, out of your control this year, what was the most frustrating offense to go against for you?
That's a good question, actually. I'll say the Bills this past playoff game. I mean, it wasn't that it was too hard to figure out. Like, the game plan was simple. I don't think they really threw nothing crazy at us. It was just that I think they had a lot of control, a lot of possession of the game. And it was frustrating because they were just getting the key downs that they needed. And the key drives that they needed for them to win the game. And it's frustrating because we couldn't really get control of it. We couldn't get momentum to swing our way. And that was the toughest part about it. So I'd definitely say Buffalo for sure.
Is it the running? Like, is the running frustrating because you don't get the chance to impact the game as much?
Yeah, it's the running. Then, you know, when they do pass the ball, it's like it was working out in their favor. So it was like one of those games where, like, everything had to be perfect. And that's what playoff football is about. Like, like little mistakes here and there would sort of cost you later on in the game. But it seemed like they was dialing up, man. And I can honestly say I give kudos to them. They played a perfect game throughout the game. They didn't really make no mistakes. Everything was really, like, focused on moving the ball, running the ball, and capitalizing on the big plays. So that's what I see through their offense. And that's what was so frustrating about them, with them running the ball and also leading the run game into the pass game. So
I thought you were going to, we weren't on the same page on that one. I thought you were going to say Jamar. Do you the love Bengals, going against Jamar?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we had our fair share of battles through college and in high school. So, you know, whenever we go up against each other, we know what it is. It's going to be a pretty fun matchup. I mean, we know each other pretty well, just because of our runs back in the day. But yeah,
is he the best receiver you faced this year?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I think all around.
What sets him apart now?
Him and Joe connecting together, I think that's tough to stop, for sure.
Do you think they've gotten better together? Has their connection gotten even scarier since back when you faced them all those times?
Oh yeah, I think it's even better now because, you know, in the league, to be able to connect like that in the league, I think that's pretty dominant. You know, in college, I mean, he had him, Justin, Clyde Edwards on the offense. So I think, not saying he wasn't getting as many looks as he had, but I feel like their offense back then was unstoppable. But to see that transpire into the league, that's pretty special for sure.
You go up against a receiver that I think is very special in practice, in Courtland Sutton, special on the field, off of it, what he's been able to accomplish facing a lot of adversity in his career has been amazing. I remember sitting with you two in August and he was very confident in his connection with Bo. You know, usually it's like, I take it with a grain of salt. It's August or whatever. He called his shot. He said, we're a playoff team. We're going to the playoffs. Can you contextualize for me how important Courtland Sutton was to the team's success this year?
Very important. I'll say there was a couple games, you know, without his impact, the game probably would have changed. I think he's been huge for us this season. He's made game-changing plays. He's a very reliable, consistent target for us. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure if you asked Bo, he would say the same thing, because if you're looking for a big play down the field, if you're looking for a catch, a much-needed catch on a crucial down, I think he'll make it. Just because of his consistency of catching the ball, running routes, being the playmaker that he is. And he called his shot, like you said, that we was going to make the playoffs. And a lot of, you know, the success that we had during this playoff run was because of, you know, the plays that he and Bo made. So it was definitely a special year for him in the offense. And, you know, I can't wait to see what they do for years on. And it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'd love to see some footage of Bo. Can we get some footage control room of the relationship of how he looks? I mean, rookie quarterback, like I said, you guys kind of felt confident. I felt like you guys were super into him. But, you know, Bo Nix, rookie of the year, sure. But he was looking like an MVP at certain points of the season. What impressed you most since August, since I talked to you last?
What impressed me most is I just think how he was able to control the offense and sort of have so much of a presence leadership-wise over the locker room. I think everybody felt his presence. Everybody felt the type of player he was. I mean, obviously, he's an exceptional player, but the person he is on top of that makes him an even better person. I think with his composure, with his attitude that he brings to the game, he's going to be a threat for years to come in this league. You know, you've seen it this year, and this was only, you know, his rookie year. And to see that happen his rookie year, I'm excited to see where he grows on from here on there. So, yeah, Bo's going to be something special for sure. So I'm excited for him.
He's up for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Coach Payton is a finalist for Coach of the Year. Would you like to make the case for him?
Sean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like the proof is in the pudding. Honestly, I mean, you see what type of coach he is. You know, to bring an organization that's been on a playoff drought for so many years and to bring the confidence, the swagger back in towards the team, I think that speaks for itself. And on top of that, his resume speaks for itself. Him being, you know, in consistent playoff games, you know, him winning the Super Bowl. I mean, I think that's what it is. I think Sean brings the best out of his players each and every year. I mean, he's going to be the same person. He never changes. And, you know, I think he's definitely deserving of that award. Just what he's able to do and how he transcended the organization. So my vote is 100% Sean Payton, Coach of the Year.
And you guys might pull off the trifecta, which would be amazing. You've had success. You just gave so much love to the Bills and how great they are, who just fell to the Chiefs, which I'm sure you're not happy to see. You can't be happy to see as a true Denver Bronco. But you've had success against the Chiefs in these matchups. You've picked off Patrick Mahomes twice in your career. What is the key to picking off Patrick Mahomes?
I think the key is, you know, Mahomes, I think the thing now is that his IQ has been even greater this year. I think he understands defenses and this and that. So I think you got to give him different looks. You got to disguise him differently, show him different coverages. I mean, you can't give him the same look, so he's going to pick that apart. So, and I think you just got to fly around defensively, create pressure, make him make errant throws. And I think that's what allows you to create turnovers and change the duration of the game. I mean, because, you know, in big-time games like that, you need to create turnovers against him, or I feel like the odds won't go in your favor. So I think defensively, you got to fly around, communicate, give them different looks, different disguises, and, you know, fly around and capitalize on the opportunity when the ball in the air. So not saying that is that easy, but as long as you do it at a high level, that will happen.
The question I have then is, like, Fangio, can he do it, right? So you played for him your rookie year. I'd love to know how you're feeling about that, because he's had success in slowing down Mahomes and the Chiefs in the past as well. What makes him unique? Like, what makes this OG who's been in the league forever, what makes him, I mean, literally 40 years, what makes him so unique?
Yeah. I think you just described it right there.
What do you mean?
I think, like you said, his experience in his league, you know, top down, I think that's the difference. You know, him running the same defensive system and is having its success, I think that's what it is. And I played in the system for a year, and I could say the success translates on the field. You know, he knows what offenses are coming with, tendencies and this and that. And he's played the Chiefs plenty of years during his time here in Denver. So, you know, he knows them like a book. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see what he throws at them. And I think they got a very good shot of stopping that, especially with him at DC.
Why?
So.
Tell me why. Because when I think about you, it was your rookie year, and he got the best out of you. And now these two rookie DBs in Philly, Quinion, Cooper DeJean, like there's something about a young DB with Fangio that just makes magic happen, it seems like.
Yeah, I think he puts him in the right positions to succeed. Yeah, them boys balling out over there in Philly, the M-Bulls. So, yeah, it's pretty reminiscent when I was a rookie and how I was able to succeed in his defense. But, you know, he just brings the confidence out of his players for them to fly around in their own skill set. And that, as you can see, them boys flying around. So, yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a good matchup. I can't wait to see the Chiefs versus the Eagles. So,
you're picking the Eagles, it sounds like.
Got to. It's only right.
Got to. Yeah, you got to, You want to take a short TV break? We're taking a short TV break. I want to ask you, because we're still live on YouTube, I want to ask you about the Pro Bowl. Adam McKeek.
All right, we're going to do some hunch time here, Kay. FanDuel's going to have a special
I don't have any information.
Touchdown.
Tell me the thing.
It is, yeah, it's in the D block.
Okay, great.
So, FanDuel is going to be doing a special promotion for Anytime Touchdown scores for Super Bowl 59. That's going to come out next week, so look out for that. So we're going to do a little touchdown hunch time. Let's bring up the full screen here, Kay, and take a look at the odds on the Chiefs side. So give me one Anytime Touchdown score for Kansas City.
Worthy is scoring, baby. You just heard Luke Kuechly, the speed, the reach, the big play, like the easy little things that are happening. 4 touchdowns in his last 6 games. Worthy is worthy in the Super Bowl. And it's just going to be like, you know what it's going to do to these Buffalo Bills fans complaining? It's just a dagger to these Bills fans, Hamilton. So they got to see it coming.
I love that one. All right, let's go to the Eagle side of things. Who do you think finds the end zone for Philly?
Dallas Goedert. I'm looking at the odds right here. +320. Lock it in. What's the next one?
That's it. We're doing those two for today.
That's it. All right. That's it. I got Dallas Goedert. Those are your Anytime Touchdown scores. I guess FanDuel is doing something special with this. FanDuel has all sorts of promotions, all sorts of things going on. Go over there. Get it done. I don't know if we're doing... Are we doing a Super Bowl parlay? I don't think so. Are we?
We might. Maybe? Yeah. It's being talked about. There are rumblings.
No one's talked about it with me. Okay, I'm going to do the Graders Challenge. Thanks, Hammy. Here's the deal. It's not the Graders Challenge. We are so lucky to have Graders send me the thing that everybody's talking about on socials. It's all viral. It's everywhere. Everybody wants it. Graders is my favorite ice cream. Oh, sorry, Hamilton. I can still hear you. Sorry. Graders. Skyline Chili. Skyline Spice with oyster crackers. I'm trying it. Graders, thank you. I heard a rumor. Bengals are doing big things. Oh my gosh, there's legit oyster crackers in here. Yum, give me this right now. Okay, it's delicious. It doesn't taste like chili. It doesn't taste like chili. Look at the crunch. ASMR. It is creamy and wonderful. It's the perfect amount of spice. It almost tastes like cinnamony, but it's got like the dulcet tones of Skyline Chili, which I've had many a times, never in ice cream form. This is chili, not chili. Get it? It's cold. And there's legit huge oyster crackers in here, which are my favorite. Love it. Graders, love you. Jason Kelsey, be jealous. Eat your heart out. You can ship Graders, by the way. They shipped it to me overnight. And they are amazing. And I hear they're coming to Super Bowl. So I'm going to enjoy this for breakfast. And you guys, we will see you tomorrow with Eli Manning on the show.